Hi, and welcome to the Wellevate Life podcast. My name is Irina.
And I'm Dr. Naz.
And we're your hosts for the podcast.
With this podcast, we'll be cutting through all the noise and bad information by having conversations with leading thinkers, cultural changers, and industry disruptors about shifting old paradigms and starting new conversations.
Side by side, we'll be covering the topics that matter the most, from tried and tested ancestral practices to the best modern health hacks. We want to inspire you to elevate your mind, body, and soul to become the best version of you. I'm extremely excited to introduce our next guest, a wonderful, beautiful person inside out, a dear friend of mine, and one of the most successful businesswomen in the media industry and fashion industry. Zoya Sucker is a prominent fashion model, entrepreneur, and longtime supporter of well-being and integrative living. The half Lebanese, half Russian model is much more than what meets the eyes. Despite her astonishing stature and beauty, she's a well-educated businesswoman and a devoted mother. Zoya majored in psychology and resided in Lebanon till 2006, when she relocated to Dubai at the age of 18, where she was named Miss Beauty International in Venezuela. We chatted with the amazing Zoya Sucker on everything related to her life, business, plans, and her diagnosis with celiac disease. Let's learn how Zoya juggles everything with perfection and her tips on looking so beautiful despite all the challenges. Our guest today, I met around 10 years, or I think a little more than 10 years ago. For me, she represents the meaning of her name to the fullest. One of the very few genuine, simple, true to themselves, and grounded people I know. Zoya Sucker, welcome to Wellevate Life.
Irina, thank you so much for your lovely words. It's always a pleasure just to be around you.
Thank you. We are so excited to have you on board Wellevate Life as one of the cultivators. You have so much to offer to our listeners. If I had to introduce you through all your achievements and titles you hold, well, that would be the longest introduction we would have to do on our podcast. So let's begin right from the beginning so our listeners can understand how you are an ambassador of your name, Zoya, meaning life, alive. Tell us right from the beginning, where did it all start?
Definitely, it started from my village in Bentaal in Lebanon, where I was born and grew up. I had a very nice childhood connected to the nature and to healthy living. I always went to school from a reserve. I lived in a natural reserve. And this is how I connect to nature since I was really young. And I built in parallel my career. I moved to Dubai. I'm basically a journalist, studied psychology and political science, and grew and got mature by working, learning, listening to people with wisdom like yourself, and made my career.
Well, Zoya, you're very humble. So I'll have to put those beautiful titles you hold, the different roles you play, because I think that also brings in the well-being aspect of you. So Zoya, you're prominent in the fashion world. You've been a model. You've been, represented as Miss Beauty International in Venezuela. You are a Harvard graduate, in business. You are a very prominent role. I mean, psychology, you studied that.
Yeah.
And why didn't you continue, probably like your father was a physician in the field of medicine?
Basically, the media attracted me a lot and it came my way. But I studied psychology because my mom is a psychopathologist. And I shifted into media. But psychology is an amazing base to raise a family, to raise kids. I have three beautiful kids and I use it daily in my meetings and my HR and my life. So it's a great base for every woman to have this major, I believe.
So you're not only one of the most influential businesswomen in the Middle East, but also a supporter of well-being and integrative living. It's all about be real, be whole, be innovative. You know, you've beautifully integrated the three main facets of your life: health, relationships, and wealth.
How have you managed to keep this harmony? And I don't think this question is coming as a woman. I think Dr. Nas will be able to plug in also the daily challenges. How do you stay in harmony, Zoya?
Basically, I kept on learning, and you had a big role in this for me. I learned a lot, really, Irina, from you, from Viva Meyer Medicine, traveling to their facilities and learning. It was like university for me. And when I learned about also my disease, my celiac, I had to take it seriously more and more. And I always loved healthy food, things coming directly from nature. This is how I was brought. I believe this impacted me. And we are in learning process every day on what's good for us.
Well, I just wanted to jump in there. I mean, I guess, was it something that you were practicing from the start to some degree? I know, Irina, obviously you met later on and had a big influence, but was wellness and health sort of always a priority? Because from what I see, whilst the body likes balance, unfortunately our modern life leads to imbalance, and health is one of those things, particularly when we're young and thriving, we tend to neglect. Until unfortunately for some people, they have a health issue, or a relative has an health issue, or there's some other form of epiphany. Was it something that you were in tune with from a young age?
Yes, because really we had everything at my house. We had our chicken, our eggs, our everything. It should be organic. This is how we were brought. It was easy for me. I haven't ever liked anything not healthy. My taste is used to healthy things, so it was easy for me. But learning what's good, what's not good, also living in Dubai, helped me, and how to keep my pH, my acidity, all those that are crucial for our health to avoid any diseases later. I believe this is the impact of medicine and knowledge that affects it, to start it at early age, not when we have the alarm of a disease or something.
I think, Zoya, as a journalist, as someone who comes across so many brand informations, you know, you have been a part of building the media empire here in this region. I'm sure a lot of information comes your way, and it also confuses. So there's two questions I'd like to ask. One is, how do you personally select what information you feel, you know, would suit you and which you would like to follow? Because again, you're bombarded with information on well-being, wellness, health as a media. And then how do you set a criteria on what should be published? You know, both sides. Quite a challenge.
Definitely. It's the trust we build with people we meet, with doctors we meet. It's a trust. Like, I meet Dr. Nas and I sit with him, and it's the information that he will give, the logic that he gives behind it, either it will convince me or not. I walk out and I have my brain digest everything and decide, other than the books that we read and the research that we do. When I went to Viva Meyer, Irina, I was convinced by everything immediately. And then if I go to another spa that doesn't have this level of information, this level of depth into the research and the know-how of our body, that everything starts from the stomach, I know how to pick what's right, what's not. I believe this is based on experience and life. But I think that's the maturity phase.
I agree with you, but I guess the challenge with you also, when we look advertisers, right? So you may, you're also blessed that you or many media or many influencers have the opportunity to visit a lot of places, and you can pick and choose for your personal. But if an advertising budget comes, a large amount of budget, does that sometimes challenge you on where you do not want it to be a part of your media, but it's forced to?
Honestly, I've never been in charge of something like this, to be able to push something that I'm not convinced. But when I push it, I know there is a difference. I always differentiated between a spa and a clinic, and people should understand it. So when it's a spa, you push it as a spa. When it's a clinic, you push it as a clinic. And for me, it's people confuse, they get confused between both. So that's where you can have a trust more when it's a clinic. I never push something I'm not convinced in. Big budgets are not usually in wellness, they give us more the freedom. I'm lucky to have experienced this. Usually the fashion business and the beauty business, they bombard you with budgets and on pushing products more than experiences and things related to health. Thanks God, in our region, we don't have it. Maybe in other countries, yes.
I think it's important to highlight also for the listeners that you're making a big distinction between the perception that somewhere is good based on, for example, how loud they shout or, you know, how big their marketing budget is and what their facility looks like. You're looking way beyond that. And as you said, you use the word trust. And, yeah. You know, I find it is more and more about empowering the client to make informed decisions. I mean, gone should be the days where you're being told what to do. I mean, I am just a provider of information, and it's for that person to build that trust and that person to decide on what they do with that information.
Definitely.
I think Dr. Nas, the question would be to you now. You also have a lot of celebrities, influencers, prominent people coming to you. You know, I think it's the same way. How do you deal with the, how can I put this diplomatically? How do you
just don't deal? Say it how it is.
Just be myself. How do you deal with those egos, you know, as a doctor? Because I'm sure at some point it takes, it puts pressure on your own health.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting because from my experience, the people who are in that sort of sphere often turn out to be the most humble and genuine people because they don't really have anything to pretend about. So, you know, what you see is what you get. Yeah. There's also this kind of perception that because they have access to maybe anywhere around the world and whoever they want to see, that's not always the case, because sometimes they'll be living in a bubble that's controlled by the people that their immediate people who they're exposed to. So often their experience can be quite limited and skewed. But also on the flip side, when you've been to so many places, if you have been to so many places around the world and seen so many different people, I mean, I see this in my day-to-day life. I mean, often some clients will have four different physicians that they have on speed dial. And unfortunately, as it is with healthcare, you'll have four differing opinions. And so it almost ends up in a situation where they're playing each other off. I'm a firm believer that you just have to have that one person in that area that you trust and go with that one opinion, as you do, Arena. But often people end up confused by that. And I think it just creates a lot of health anxiety and often wrong decision-making.
Yeah. I think, Zoya, that's where you come in. You have always been a very loyal person. This is my friendship with you. Loyalty has been a huge thing I've seen with you. And everything you get involved with, you become very loyal. Your involvement with your new homegrown brand, the Flower Society, you explain it as a sense memory experience. Can you expand a little more on that and your support for Lebanon's humanitarian needs as a brand?
Definitely the idea of the Flower Society came from my village, from Bentail, where I come from Lebanon. And I wanted to create something new away from my daily busy life and the media field and the production. And I connect in a way with the flowers that you have here in the atelier and the work we do. I connect with the garden of my mom, with my memories and the smell that I have from the peonies and the roses and the mountains. So it's a happy business that I'm really happy to do, and working on definitely supporting the agriculture in Lebanon through the export that we can do from Lebanon to here. But it's very challenging. Lebanon is going through the toughest period now. And having a team from Lebanon as well is a kind of support to my home country. But the challenge is big with Lebanon, and I really hope things will get better to be able to connect more and to help more and to be an added value from Dubai to Lebanon.
And how can people help to support that? One is, of course, purchasing or placing orders. Is there any other events or pop-ups that you are planning to do which could help the community in Lebanon?
Yeah, we're working on that. Nothing tangible for this summer because the country is going through a shortage of everything, even water, which is the most challenging because of the electricity lag. I'm so sad for what's happening in Lebanon. My bond is so strong with my village and with people that are still there. But the best help we're doing is moving some of the young age people that finished university and have no future in Lebanon, to help them to build their future like I built mine here in Dubai. I'm very grateful to be here. All my dreams came true because I decided to move to Dubai. Let's be very objective. Paying back to the community is giving opportunity to people that have big dreams like I had.
So moving to Dubai, I understand the opportunities were there, Zoya, but it's also hard work. And that's something, again, you possess is hard dedication. Before we move into the health topic for this session, which we're going to talk about celiac, I think I would also love to expand on what's next in terms of business, and where do you draw the line? It's enough, because you're a mother, a very dedicated mother. And I remember, you know, a few years ago, you also said you wanted to expose your children to the Russian side of you. Now you're half Lebanese, half Russian. You know, has that caused any of those cultural differences caused or added on and given value to where you are today?
Of course, like definitely it added value, added love to the Russian culture, to my roots there. I've been brought in Lebanon all my life, but I feel Russian. I connect with their traditions. Russians, my mom specifically, she's so connected to everything that is well-being, so connected. So well-being was part of our life since we were young. It's always not what we eat, what's good for us. It's always not the taste. It's discovering the best for our body. So, like, I don't know if you know the product Shilajit or Momiyo in Russian. I always discovered with her ingredients in the nature that now I hear about it again in the world. Yes, so definitely.
I think we're all going back to the basics, Dr. Nas. I'm sure as a doctor also in your practice, it's going back to being simple and call it the grandma, you know, recipes, the myths, but I'm sure you applied also, be it a turmeric, you know, in your practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And it spans not just nutrition, it's the way people move, the way we manage stress, the sleep hygiene practices we put in place. People are now rediscovering the more sort of ancestral lifestyle that we, you know, skipped for the last generation or two generations. And yeah, you'll often find that's the things that your grandparents spoke about when you were a young child, it's now resonating, you know, as we've got older. And you know, we're trying to reclaim our health now finally. And you know, we've said this before, COVID has been a terrible event around the world, as I think made people prioritize their health and well-being a lot more. So you are seeing this drive to adopt more of a sort of natural lifestyle.
I think Zoya and Dr. Nas, we all three will understand this. It unfortunately took me to go back to a place like Austria 16 years ago to learn that chewing can be medicine, mindful eating. You know, the habits we learn when we were young, and unfortunately we get into this rut of business, work, and some, unfortunately, those, the foundation is what we let go of. So I completely am with you, you know, water not being served when you're eating and chewing, mindfulness, breathing, movement are medicine. And this is what the three of us at least practice and we advocate. Talking about health now, I love digging into the history of health problems. And with celiac, the topic that we are going to expand on now, I read that scientists realized that when humans first evolved, we were separated into one of two categories, which we all know, hunters or gatherers. You know, our diets consisted of lots of fruits, nuts, and on occasion, meat. when the hunters came back full-handed. So over time, we ditched these old ways and learned how to cultivate plants, sparking the, you know, the agricultural revolution. But while these advancements were important milestones in our history, they weren't without their drawbacks. And the drawbacks that really came upon was the human gut had functioned the same way for more than 2 million years prior to the agricultural revolution, meaning it was used to tolerating the same food antigens. And that is what it's all about. But now the antigens, you know, have changed. And we've adopted things like food intolerances and allergies. And these food antigens began celiac disease. Now, I know that sounds a little boring, but I wanted to know, where did celiac start from? And I didn't realize till I read, you know, and Zoya, thank you for sharing your personal health challenge story with celiac today with us. Make us understand, you know, where did it start? Where did the symptoms, the diagnosis, treatments, prevention, educate us today, please?
I wanted to hear your opinion about and to introduce the disease, because I know a little from what he knows, and then I can maybe share my experience. So to introduce
Dr. Ness, the floor is all yours.
Yes. Yeah. So celiac disease is, you will hear so people talk about autoimmune conditions, auto meaning self. And I think the easiest way of putting it is where the immune system becomes dysregulated and you start to get a breakdown in particular tissues. In this case, you're getting a dysregulated immune reaction in the gut, which has been triggered by gluten. Now, you know, people will have a genetic predisposition to it, but it's still only a very small percentage of those people with a genetic predisposition whereby that condition will get expressed. So quite clearly, there are a number of different environmental triggers that bring it out. It depends who you speak to, whether it's a traditionalist or someone more in a integrative or functional crowd. But the modern day thinking is that there is a preceding set of factors. So you have your genetics, there's certain environmental insults, whether that be stress, whether it be stress even in a kind of fetal environment, what was the maternal environment like generation before, because there is this transgenerational sort of imprinting that can leave a potential predisposition. You know, what has nutrition been like from the earliest days? Things like antibiotic usage, toxin exposure, all of these factors have been implicated in terms of environmental variables that may bring out the expression of celiac. But essentially, it's a allergy to gluten, and the cure is to eliminate gluten really in totality, ultimately. And I don't know what Zoya's personal experience was of, you know, how it was diagnosed and how she's managed it since.
For me, it was a constant pain, stomach pain. When I went to the doctor, he did all the blood tests, and I had a very high inflammation of my blood clots, TBA, I think, TBA, I forgot the abbreviation. And then he did the genetic test, and they went all positive. And I had to eliminate completely. And it's a very big challenge in some countries, some cities, especially the contamination, because it's not an intolerance, it's severe. Like, my body reacts to the small molecule as much as if I eat a full bread. So I'm not someone who loves bread or wheat. Usually I always eliminate it since I was young, but it happens that it's everywhere, especially in the soya sauce and all the restaurants. And I love about Dubai that there is a strict guidelines and the good restaurants to have a different kitchen for the celiac. The states, they take it so seriously. Some countries, they don't take it seriously. And due to my travel schedule, I have always to adapt and to protect myself. It's a big challenge. It's not easy. I lost my dad at an early age, and I don't know if it's true, Dr. Nasr, but they say it affects also, it causes diabetes. There are different views on that. I believe my dad had it and he didn't know. Like, diagnosis started like 20 years ago, maybe, right? Not before that.
Well, and it's interesting because there's this perception that everyone presents in the textbook fashion, young child with potentially failure to thrive or, you know, quite significant gut issues, whether that be sort of bloating and diarrhea, when actually it's not the case. As you pointed out, we're often diagnosing or have diagnosed people in their fifth or sixth decade who just present with an iron deficiency anemia. And particularly in females, that's, you know, a kind of red flag to test for it. So it can be something that's very subtle, and it is something that needs to be managed because, yeah, without treating it, particularly if you don't have significant symptoms, it can go on to lead to sort of other complications, whether that be further autoimmune conditions or, you know, cardiovascular disease, cancers, etc.
Dr. Nasoya, I'd love to dig in a bit on the autoimmune. You know, we keep hearing it. It's associated to almost every disease right now on the planet, be it diabetes, to Down syndrome, to cancer. Dr. Nas, what's your view on maybe, of course, associated to celiac? Do you think it's the mucosa in the small intestine, which is where it starts?
Yes, I do on the kind of current evidence. I mean, you have to remember that the body is kind of has to strike quite a delicate balance between what it tolerates and what it doesn't tolerate. And a large part of that is the aspect of the immune system in the gut, because it's exposed to the external environment. I mean, it's a significant surface area. So it's being constantly exposed to these antigenic triggers, and it's having to work out what it should tolerate and what it shouldn't. A large part of that is dictated by the bacteria that we have in our gut. And a large basis to the theories of tolerance and intolerance and the regulation of the immune system is that, you know, factors like the wrong nutrition, and a lot more now sort of toxins. And I know we're having a conversation tomorrow with Dr. Stephanie Seneff, and she's kind of a world expert in how glyphosate is leading to a lot of autoimmune conditions, particularly autism and other conditions. So I think there's a lot still to figure out. Mechanistically, there is a lot that we understand, but there's even more to sort of still figure out. But the deeper we go into understanding the gut, and we've been fortunate in the last 10 years plus that the newer PCR sequencing techniques, which have allowed us to get a better understanding of the microbial makeup, has led to a significant progression in that understanding. And, you know, it's only really in the early 2000s that a doctor called Alessio Fasano highlighted this concept of zonulin and how gluten affects zonulin being the kind of protein that links our gut junctions together, and this concept of gut permeability came about, which unfortunately still gets ridiculed. I think part of that is because people use the lay term of kind of leaky gut, and in itself just doesn't really sound particularly professional, but it's a very well established condition, and gluten is intimately tied to the permeability of the gut.
So Zoya, the question to you would be, you know, you have been going to, be it a Viva Maya or personally, you've been always following a great health regimen, you know, a rhythm on it. Where did your gut, did you go to the specialist? You know, were there certain symptoms you were experiencing over months and years? Was it that when you would have bread and that's when, what made you go to the doctor?
Yeah, it was always a feeling of pain that I had, and I didn't know this is maybe when I'm having the sushi or the soya that is in all salads and everywhere. So I went to the doctor to understand this constant pain that started, and it was only 4 years ago. So I wish I discovered it earlier, and I was worried if I had other damages, because usually the autoimmune links to others, to osteoporosis, because the wall of the stomach becomes flat and then my stomach is not absorbing any nutrient. I always had anemia, so definitely might be linked as well. And we have diabetes in the family, so I was worried also not to have it. And there are different researchers that linked. Viva Meyer was more for stress before that. I'm so looking forward to go again now and understand their view on my celiac. But as you know, since COVID, I didn't go, and I discovered it just before COVID, my celiac disease. I'm so eager to know and see their point of view on this and how to calm my stomach. For now, I drink everyday celery juice. I believe it has some anti-inflammatory effect on my body to avoid taking anything more. And Viva Meyer were, for me, the best treatment for stress and for calming everything related to stress, from back pain to mental pain to everything, you know. How it is there.
Absolutely. No, I think, Dr. Nas, how important is food intolerance tests or food allergy tests to start? So say a patient comes in, let's walk us through what are the steps that you would probably take to maybe a gut feeling of yours saying, all right, it could be celiac. What would you be looking for?
Well, I think primarily the history, but assuming someone presents with a typical sort of gut symptoms or issues in the gut, then it's actually fairly easy to diagnose celiac disease, so where you actually have an allergy to gluten. But what's evolved more in the last 20 years is this concept of food intolerance or sensitivities. And this isn't one condition. It's a kind of umbrella term for a variety of different potential issues. Now, people will sort of go to clinics, and we offer them ourselves and do these food intolerance tests. And actually, the term actually doesn't get used accurately. I mean, strictly an intolerance means where you lack a certain enzyme to digest a food product. And the most common one is lactose intolerance, whereby you don't have the enzyme lactase to digest the lactose, and it leads to a variety of typically gastrointestinal symptoms. What probably is a better term is food sensitivity. And the interesting thing about gluten is, or I should say wheat, is there's many ways that someone may be sensitive, or many reasons that wheat product might be causing problems. And all the attention is on gluten, but there's many other potential wheat proteins that someone could react to. And it's not a simple case of wheat in itself is inherently a problem. For a lot of people, it's the more genetically sort of modified wheat that we're eating now versus, say, a century ago. There's very large differences just in macroscopic view of that wheat. But when you look at it under the microscope, there are a far bigger differences in terms of the level of glutens, the level of non-gluten sort of proteins. There are other compounds which listeners may have heard of called lectins, which are other indigestible proteins. We've spoken about, could it be the glyphosate that's with the wheat that's then disturbing the gut bacteria that is leading to an inability to digest the wheat, or worse still, an immune reaction that's non-celiac? Is it the fermentable carbohydrates? Do people have a bacterial imbalance that's leading to increased fermentation of that carbohydrate, which is leading to symptomology? So, the more we talk about it, the more complex it becomes. And I think it's just important that people are aware of those different types of reactions and not just hedge their bets with a single test. And unfortunately, whilst we don't have the one perfect test to necessarily tell someone exactly what's going on, I think as long as you see someone who appreciates these various different ways in which food or products which are associated or being delivered with the food can affect the gut, and you're open-minded to that fact, and you're willing to, unfortunately, have to do an N equals one experiment and trial a lot of these things, then you may not get to the bottom of the problem and be told to sort of live with a chronic issue and often get labeled with something like IBS or, just told you're in this gray area and we don't really know what's going on. So it's, I'm sure you've probably realized that it's something that's continually evolving, but is extremely complex. And that being said, on a simple level, it can be just a case of, well, at least trialing, and your body will tell you whether, you know, you're happy with something or not. But it's not often a case of all or nothing. I will see people whereby they can have a pizza in Dubai and it gives them the worst symptoms ever, and they have that same pizza in Italy and they don't get the same symptoms. Is that the fact that the wheat's different? Is it the fact that it's raised with a different type of yeast or non-chemical yeast?
I have an answer.
You can come in and say, is it the fact that they're more, are they more chilled out? Are they sitting and relaxing and whilst they're eating their food? So it's a very complex area.
I think, Zoya, because you travel so much, you would probably be able to give us some great insight here. Does your digestive system change in different countries, and how? For the better or for the worse?
Definitely, when I go to home, it's always better. When I'm in cities that I cannot control, definitely we all suffer from all the bloating, all the effects of the food that we intake. But after I got my celiac, I'm really, really very cautious from whatever I eat. I'm very picky and I try as much as possible not to explore and not to take risks. But still, it's sometimes out of control. I feel in Dubai, there is a respect for allergies now and for intolerances, more to allergies. And we're way better than Japan, than big cities in the world. I can compare every city. And I, because I'm now like really, for me, it's essential where I eat and how much I can trust the kitchen I eat in. But before moving from this topic, I wanted to ask Dr. Nasser, my disease is irreversible, but I heard there are some studies that might come out in a few years that they're trying to reverse the celiac. Do you have any information on that?
I think probably the best way of sort of describing it is more you will be able to, I think, manage it. I'm not sure sort of reverse it completely, as in I think that tendency to having that predisposition and it reverting back will always be there. But coming back to the microbiome, I think there is a huge amount of weight now behind the bacteria leading to a lot of this inflammatory response or dysregulation, and there may be ways of regaining that by whether that be supplemental, or you know, I know there's a lot of research now behind sort of fecal transplantation. As for a full sort of reversal, I'm not so sure, but I guess we can hope for it.
I think, Zoya, to add on to this, there's so much out there, you know. Let's take cancer as one of the most, I think people are getting cancer more than colds. You have some doctors who have the cure, and then those who are unfortunately got the budget saying there is really not cure where we're going to keep digging, you know, so you have treatment. So I think with anything, this is my personal experience, is just to explore further. And if people are open to the idea of integrative medicine, which I know you are a part of that thinking, where you integrate complementary, alternative, and conventional, nothing is right or wrong, but maybe having an open mind of having more choices. And there's plenty of choices out there, you know? Sometimes it could be on just to relax the system, especially the gut, an acupuncture session. Overall, it just helps to handle it better. And with you traveling so much, I'm sure it's not been easy. And you always look your best, even in the most natural look, but I'm sure that's taking a toll, you know? It's taking a toll. You guys were talking about diets. This is something I read a while ago. There was a doctor by the name of Dr. Haas. He was very popular in bringing the banana diet for celiac. So basically he promoted eating bananas to his patients. But at the same time, he told them avoid gluten, potatoes, and cereal. And I think it was only later that they realized that it was not due to the banana, but more of eliminating the gluten. So I guess one thing, the best is we know gluten is an issue. And then like Dr. Nas said, a gluten has to be expanded. It has different schools, different areas of where we need to. And that itself becomes a cure. And diet, I believe, plays the strongest role for celiac, you know. And this is what we do at Veloweight is bring in more expertise. So, for example, Zoya, tomorrow, the doctor we're speaking to, Dr. Senev, she's changed my life. Glyphosate, this name that I've been introduced to, things are changing in the house within 2 weeks for me, you know. And of course, gluten is one of the biggest things. So hopefully we will be able to share some more and put some more light on it and give you more information as a celiac patient, you know, how could it help? But self-care is a very big thing for you, Zoya. We would love to know, what are the other things that you do, whether it's sage, you know, burn, what do you surround yourself with to just keep an overall well-being?
I definitely write my intentions always. I believe writing your intentions, you materialize your thoughts and you put goals in your life, from the simple things to my big dreams. And it worked for me. I sage, I definitely cleanse. I believe in energy, and this is how also I surround people. I surround myself by good energy, and I believe people are different. Some they hold a good energy for me, but bad energy for others. I don't know. So I try to live a joie de vivre, and this affects my mental, my health, my life. I learn to. I'm still learning to take things easily, not to stress. Everything can be sorted quietly. I'm someone patient and quiet as a character, and I'm working on myself to also to be better. This is the basic of wellness, to avoid stress, living in a stressful city by having time for myself. Every day I have an hour for myself between yoga, between anything that helps my mindset and my mental.
I think, Dr. Nas, you'll agree as a doctor too, those are the great tools, no matter what health challenges we all have, to apply this in our daily routine. It's so critical. And I guess, Zoya, with the Flower Society, it's also helped you to be around the most beautiful nature elements, which lifts you up on a daily basis, you know? So, yeah, nature being, I guess, the number one for me, at least. So Zoya, the question will always be there, like you've probably been asked in every interview of yours, what's next? What's next with Zoya?
For me, what's next is like having a stable flow of life. This is what I'm working on now. I'm in Dubai, not traveling. May, June, I'll have lots of travel. So I'm happy to be here to stabilize my flow, my daily flow, because really sometimes we're just following the rhythm and not thinking of how to have a steady life for our well-being. So the next thing is to grow the Flower Society, grow my team, have the dream team, because it's a new brand that I was born last September only, and the potential is big in the region. It gives me an amazing drive to come every day in the morning to sit with my team and see what's the best for the company. So this is on a professional level.
Well, Zoya, we will always wish you all the very best. We look forward to, you know, keeping a close eye, because you're so exciting. Every time I meet you, something new is up your sleeve. So I'm really, really excited to see the growth of the Flower Society, your health improving, and we hope to have you back on Veloweight to share the cure to celiac one day. And I'm sure you will get, you know, you will get close to that.
Thank you, Elena. You always inspire me with everything new you do and every knowledge you share with me. I learn from you a lot.
I think we feed off each other, all of us, you know, so, and Veloweight Life has helped us to just, it's been a great knowledge platform for us to speak to great cultivators such as yourself. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Nasser. I'm eager also to meet you one-on-one.
Look forward to it. Yeah, for sure. We'll continue the conversation.
Yes, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Zoe.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Take care.
Well, folks, that's the end of the show. And we hope you enjoyed it as much as we did.
Thank you for tuning in. And until next time, for more tips on how to elevate your life, you can reach out to us at elevate.life.